Did you hear the news? LifeFlow has been named one of the best accounting and finance software products for 2024 by G2. And because of the support of listeners like you, LifeFlow is also on G2's list of the 100 fastest growing products of 2024. If you're thinking about implementing LifeFlow with clients soon, there's even more good news. G2 also awarded LifeFlow as most implementable for winter 2024. Stay tuned to hear more from our sponsor, LifeFlow, later in the episode. Fully in-office workers average $82,000 on average. Hybrid workers average $60,000 on average, right? Mm-hmm. So basically almost $22,000 less than in-office, so hybrid. Fully remote get about $75,000 on average. So in the office, you're making more. Fully remote, you're making more. But if you're kind of hybrid, not making as much.
Coming to you weekly from the OnPay Recording Studio.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm Blake Oliver.
I'm David Leary. And Blake, I have some good news, bad news for you on one of these, you know, one of the many things you smash your hand and protest over, or you want changes in the accounting industry. You always say, hey, here's how you can fix the pipeline problem. Pay overtime to these young employees when they go work for the big four and the audit firms.
Well, it's an idea. I don't know if that's going to solve it, but I feel like if we paid people for the overtime they're working, then maybe firms wouldn't make people work so much overtime.
So the good news is the U.S. Department of Labor has a new rule that has been cleared by the White House Budget Office. They're going to expand overtime pay according to the Fair Labor Standards Act. So currently, salaried employees that make $35,568 or less get paid overtime. If you make more than let's just call it $36,000, you get no overtime for your salary.
Right.
The new rule, it's going to increase to $55,000 annually, but it may even go as high as $60,209, which is great. But here's the bad news. So I went to big4transparency.com. Starting salaries at Big Four and audit are at $68,000 a year, and non-Big Four are only $62,000 a year. So it's just like almost at the threshold to affect accounting, but not.
Yeah, it's not going to affect us because the salaries have been going up, which is good news.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but I wonder if like the interpretation of the law, if the Department of Labor is doing that correctly for accounting, or if firms are doing that correctly, because I forget exactly what the standard is. We'd have to go in and look at it, but it involves, you know, that you have to have a high degree of skill and knowledge, which I think the CPA, the education requirement satisfies. But then it's also something about using a lot of like discretion in your work and professional judgment. And I would argue that most staff in their first few years are not using a lot of professional judgment or discretion in their work if they're ticking and tying in audit departments. So I think, I don't know, maybe even a lawsuit could be brought if there was some sort of class action by accounting staff. If they ever decided to unionize, maybe they could get this rule changed for them at the big firms especially. But
could you imagine, like, why? Yeah, a lawyer should take that on, because then they would try to do like back pay for billions of years. All these years, it'd be billions and billions of dollars. It reminds me of, I don't know if you heard on NPR lately, the real estate agents, there was a court ruling against them and they had to pay all this money and they're going to,
we
might get a settlement if you pay 3% commission.
I just got the postcard in the mail because I sold a house. I don't know what the settlement covers, the time range. It didn't say on the postcard, but if you sold or bought a house in a certain time, then you could get money. So I might get some cash, David, a little rebate on that, you know, price I had to pay to sell my house, which was like 5-6%, which is just outrageous if you think about that. Welcome to our live stream viewers. Those of you who are here with us on a Friday before the tax deadline, welcome. Brianna says, I finally made a live podcast. Love the podcast. And I have earned several CPE credits from Earmark. Thank you both for such a fantastic podcast. Thank you, Brianna. Thank you for using Earmark. And for those of you who haven't tried it, you can earn CPE for listening to this show and many other fine accounting, tax, and audit podcasts. Just go to earmark.app and sign up for free, and you can start earning one CPE credit for free every single week. And if you start now, you could do it and earn all the CPE you need, potentially, for the whole year for free. And if you want to support us, you can download the mobile app and subscribe for $130 a year, and you get unlimited access to all of the courses. David, I want to get to some listener mail because that has been piling up in my mailbag. And this is from a listener who was wanted to give some feedback on audits. We were talking about audits last week, week before, in the context of the Trump SPAC audit, where the firm involved had a 100% PCAOB deficiency rating for like 3 years in a row. We talked about the auditor of Tingo, a solo CPA, apparently, in Colorado, who did an audit of a multi-billion dollar company and didn't notice the rampant fraud going on there. This is from Donald. Donald says, "Hello, I'm an auditor for a large regional firm. I think we're 25 to 30, something in that range in the country. I do local government audits. In almost 3 years of auditing and 8 years of accounting, I've realized that partners don't want to rock the boat. If I bring an issue to my senior manager and we bring it to the partner in charge, it takes an act of God for him slash her not to bend over backward to excuse the issue as not material, irrelevant, or real. The only time I've seen where the audit is released with something other than an unqualified opinion was when the firm was planning to fire the client the next year anyway, or something was so glaring that we had to carve it out like a missed bond payment that resulted in default. I find it highly discouraging and frustrating. I made the decision to leave the large practice behind, and I'm opening my own CPA firm, but focusing on what you were talking about today, accounting. So I'll be focused on providing excellent outsourced accounting services and some attestation engagements that I enjoy, but the majority of my revenue will be from CAS. Keep up your podcasts. Love it, Donald." Donald, thanks for listening. Congrats on starting your own firm, and thanks for writing in. And if you, dear listener, would like to let us know what you think, you can email us at theaccountingpodcast@earmark.me, theaccountingpodcast@earmark.me. Send us your emails, send us your voicemails, and we will play them on the air. And remember, that's the accounting podcast, like the Ohio State University. We are the only one. So do send us some mail. Lou in the live stream says, "Can you get CPE for the EA, the enrolled agent?" And yes, well, no, technically you can't get CPE because the IRS calls it CE, but you can get CE that we report to the IRS for some of our courses on Earmark. When you're in the app, go ahead and look for the courses that say IRS CE. There's a tag on those courses. And you can also filter for them in the search page and find just the courses that IRS accepts. They only take courses that are specifically on federal tax or ethics matters. So it's a smaller subset of our courses, but we do have an entire podcast where most of the courses are IRS CE, and that is Federal Tax Updates. Great podcast by Padgett, Roger Harris, Annie Schwab. Definitely listen to Federal Tax Updates and get your IRS CE on Earmark.
Do you have any other audit-related mail?
I've got lots of listener mail, but I also have some audit stories.
I have audit stories too, but I thought there was another audit mail that came through.
Let me take a look. Maybe I do.
Sometimes it comes through, and then while you look at that, I'll talk about audit. I could do some follow-up on the Trump story.
Do that. Let's talk about the Trump auditor firm. What was this? What's it called?
BF Borgers.
BF Borgers.
So last week, we finally talked about the Trump auditor for the, officially it's the Trump Media, right? It's Trump Media Industries, or what's the company? Do you remember the exact name?
I mean, it's a shell
Trump
company.
Trump Media Group. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's DJT, the stock ticker symbol. Yeah.
So a lot of articles after we recorded popped up all over the mainstream news, right? Great headlines like Trump Media's accounting firm has audit deficiency history. Trump Media Group's new auditor flagged for multiple deficiencies over the past 2 years. DJT hires accounting firm with 100% deficiency record. And you really go into those articles, it's kind of what we talked about on the show last Friday. But in my opinion, they're all missing the point because they're all obsessed with Trump and they can't see the bigger story here. Mm-hmm. Which really the bigger story, if you listen to our show, is it's not about how Trump picked a questionable auditor. The real story that they don't talk about is no matter who he picked was probably going to be a questionable auditor, right? It's the state we're in right now is questionable audits. Right? Yep. That's the normal now. And they're not, that's the story, but mainstream media is never going to touch that.
Okay, let's be fair, because I don't want our auditor listeners to get upset. So my view is that there's great auditors and then there's really bad auditors, right? It's just like cops. There's a lot of great cops out there. There's a lot of there, but there are some really bad cops. They give everyone a bad name. Auditors are financial cops. Like, that's how I like to think of us. I think that's how we should think of ourselves, right? And the problem is the system we have set up allows for a lot of bad auditors. And that brings everyone else down. And it brings down the quality of audits in general, because we're all competing now on a very, very low bar, right? And that's how you get commoditization. That's how you get low prices. If you want better salaries, we need to increase the value of audits so that auditors can get paid more. And how do you do that? You do better audits. So I like what the PCAOB is doing, or what they're trying to do. The problem is that they're just so weak that I don't think it's going to really make that much of a difference. Like, even these record-setting fines that we're seeing, the PCAOB issue, you know, they're like peanuts compared to these firms' billions and billions of dollars. Like, I just saw one. KPMG fined record $25 million in exam cheating scandal. This was in the Wall Street Journal. KPMG Netherlands, they were fined $25 million by the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board for an exam cheating scandal that took place from 2017 to 2022. This is the largest fine ever imposed by the PCAOB. It involved hundreds of professionals, including partners and senior leaders. The firm then lied to the PCAOB and tried to cover it up. The former head of assurance, Mark Hajaboom, agreed to pay $150,000 and is permanently barred from associating with a registered accounting firm. Now, $150,000, okay, it sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but to a guy who was the former head of assurance, who's probably making north of $1 million a year, I mean, okay, yeah, it hurts, right? But it's probably like a few thousand dollars to us, right, to most people. So, you know, they've agreed to make changes to their learning and development programs and implement controls
Same
and blah,
story.
Blah, blah, right? But, you know, to me, as the story in the Wall Street Journal points out, some believe it's too small to serve as a significant deterrent. But it's progress, right?
Did I hear the dates correctly? So this is a time frame of 2017 to 2022.
Yes.
Now, I'm pretty sure on our show, we could go back in our historical records. We've talked about exam cheating probably in 20 and 21. So these stories have been out there. So knowing that they were still cheating even in 21 and 22, these fines were happening. I can't fathom that they kept cheating, knowing the people were watching this now. Right?
Now, I just did a quick search on Copilot to ask what was KPMG Netherlands' revenue. So we can put this fine into context, right? $25 million US fine on revenue in 2022 of 655 million euros. So I don't know what the euros to US conversion is, but I mean, even if we just say it's the same, it's not that much of their revenue, right? A few percent maybe of 1 year. And this went on for 5 years at least. Now, somebody go, don't quote me on that because I didn't verify the AI. Actually, if I click through, I wonder, this is one thing I love about Copilot, is that you can actually click through to the sources. Oh, and interesting, it's taking me to an internal KPMG website that I have to log into. Did Microsoft Copilot scrape?
I had an article.
Internal, yeah, go ahead.
I was, again, salaries for the big four people. I clicked on it and it kept taking me to the Quicken webpage. I'm like, it didn't make any sense. So I think Copilot just randomly takes you to a random link. I don't think it's the link it highlighted. There's something not adding up. I think it's an ad. It thinks every link's an ad. It's trying to sell you something. Copilot, fix your links. They don't make sense.
Now, Gator, sorry, David. Okay. I want to highlight our live stream comments. Gator NYC says fines need to be based on percentage of revenue.
Interesting.
That could help. And David says it's $1.08 to 1 euro. Okay, so, you know, pretty equivalent.
For conversation's sake. Yeah, it's equal.
Adam says, glad I could catch the live show. Welcome, Adam. Great to have you with us. All right, go, David.
This is from a few weeks back, but PCAOB is actually, you know, they're out there. They're getting interviews for their current chair.
Erica Williams.
Erica Williams. And So she started in January 2022. Now, what's special about her, Blake, she is not from the accounting industry. So she at one time was an Obama staff. She spent 12 years in the SEC. So she's a law background, right? Mm-hmm. And she worked with the Department of Justice to dismantle Ponzi schemes, which I think kind of ironic is what you refer to accounting firms as sometimes. It's a Ponzi scheme. But in this article in Fortune, she talks about the goal here is deterrence to make those who are putting investors at risk to held account. And basically, to if quality is decreasing, keep increasing the penalties. So she's leveling these highest fines that have been put out. Like you say, they're still not big enough. The one thing I did take away from this article is the salaries of the board members of the PCAOB.
Are you familiar with this at all? They make a lot of money, don't they?
It is the highest paid in Washington, between $550,000 and $670,000 in 2021.
Now, to be fair, I actually think that is justified. Because to be on the PCAOB board, you have to understand accounting and big firms. And so what is your alternate position? Like where would you be in private industry if you weren't on the PCAOB board? Probably a partner at a big firm where you'd be making that much money.
Exactly. So it's the revolving door problem.
Yeah.
Right? They're only going to be able to hire the people that work for the firms. And the only way they're going to do it is they're going to be paid that much.
I will happily volunteer to take a 50% salary and so they can save money, and I'll do it for half the price, and I'll sit on the PCAOB board. Just want to put that out there into the universe.
Lay out higher fines and pay people even more.
So your average CPA, by the way, makes like, you know, it ranges on all these sites you look at, but I just did a search this morning. ZipRecruiter's like 100K. Some of the CPA exam sites are like 120K. So some are as low as 80K. So basically six figures, like $100,000 is the average CPA. And that's even with like a good amount of experience. So it's crazy to think like that the differential in accounting, right, as you move up is so great, where you've got partners and PCAOB board members making like, you know, $500,000 to $1 million a year.
Yeah, it's good. If you could add my screen share to the feed. One of the things that she's done is they introduced a proposal on April 9th for some metrics they want audit firms to report on. And I'll scroll down if I'm sharing here, get down to the metrics.
I just love the fact, by the way, that the PCAOB uses the default Microsoft Word formatting in all of their reports. Have you noticed that?
Well, it's clean. It's not creative, which is what you want, right? I just want to get to the point. So they have 11 proposed metrics, and I kind of want to walk through these a little bit and get your thoughts, and then I have my bigger thoughts about the whole thing. But they want to know, for example, partner and manager involvement, hours worked by senior professionals relative to junior staff across the firm's issuer engagements on the engagement.
This is the new metrics they want firms to track and report on.
Correct. The workload, the average weekly hours worked on a quarterly basis by engagement partners and other partners, manager staff. Audit resources, use of audit specialists, shared service centers. They want to track the experience of audit personnel, the industry experience of audit personnel, retention and tenure, right? How many people were departed or had got reassigned during the engagement, audit hours and risk assessment, allocation of audit hours, quality performance ratings and compensation of the actual partners working on the engagement, right? Mm-hmm. Audit firms' internal monitoring, restatement history, right? They want to track all this. And when I think about all of these are the metrics that you can map against the failed or non-failing audits. So now you'll actually have data that says, hey, when these many hours are worked, these audit mistakes are made.
Right. We'll be able to prove that overworked auditors result in lower audit quality.
Exactly.
This is great. But I imagine that the firms are going to push back on having to report all this publicly to PCAOB.
Yeah.
This is a proposal, right? It hasn't
happened
yet.
It's a proposal. Yeah. It's already ruffled feathers for sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This episode of the Accounting Podcast is sponsored by LifeFlow. LifeFlow has been successfully syncing QuickBooks Online to Google Sheets for thousands of accountants and their clients. But if you're an accountant that used Microsoft Excel, you've been missing out. until now. Now you can use LiveFlow to connect Microsoft Excel to QuickBooks Online and sync your reports in real time. With LiveFlow's newest feature, in just a few clicks, you can sync QuickBooks Online data with Excel to create live auto-updating dashboards and reports, keeping your clients in the loop. And LiveFlow makes customizing reports easy. Add rows, columns, calculations without breaking the live connection. Your formatting even stays put when the QuickBooks data refreshes. You'll save hours per month by eliminating manual exports and fixing broken spreadsheets, and you'll finish client work in record time by utilizing LiveFlow's over 100 customizable templates. It's a true set-it-and-forget-it solution that allows you to spend your time offering insightful client advisory. To revolutionize your financial reporting in Excel with LiveFlow, and to get 25% off your first 3 months, head over to accountingpodcast.com/LiveFlow. That is accountingpodcast.com/LiveFlow.
Well, since we're talking about auditors, let me bring up this story. I saw this in CFO. 71% of Big Four auditors worry about mental health. And this is, of course, one of the obvious consequences of overwork, or perhaps it's not obvious to the people who have been embedded in the toxic work culture of Big Four firms for their entire lives. But it definitely is evident to me as somebody who bought into the hustle culture for a long time and has now completely gone the other way. Yeah. And I'm on the 4-hour work week track now. The Association of Chartered Certified Accountants did a study that found that work-life balance is the most significant factor affecting talent attraction and retention in the audit profession. 61% of the thousands of finance professionals surveyed viewed auditors' work-life balance negatively. In big accounting firms, the Big Four, 71% of employees reported mental health issues due to work pressures, and 51% considered resigning due to well-being concerns. So they're considering quitting. That's burnout, right? That's basically the definition of burnout, is you feel unwell because of your work and you want to quit.
And these are a survey of the people still working in the positions. Yes. It's not the people that may have left because of burnout already.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's across the profession, but it's way worse at the Big Four. 71% agree that their mental health is suffering because of work pressures at the Big Four. Only 20% disagree. And if you go down to mid-tier firms, that goes to 61% and 30% respectively. And then at small firms, it's just over half, 54%, and 33% disagree. So like that's actually good news, in my opinion, that small firms, like you have a third of the employees who disagree. They say like, no, my mental health is great. That's good.
Well,
but I think
BF
it should
Bergers,
be.
He's got a system, I'm sure. He's like, yeah, it's been great.
So it's the small firms that do well. The public sector does the best. And then you have, you know, not-for-profits, large corporations, small. So basically industry, small firms, public sector, not-for-profits, they do way better than the Big Four. So this is evidence, clear evidence that the Big Four are burning people out and are toxic workplaces. And that is what you need to address if you want to solve the retention issue in accounting. But big firms don't want to confront that because it would mean reducing hours, and hours, selling hours is how they make money. So this is the problem. It's also the organizational structure that is the problem. And in a previous episode, I talked about the new Bayer CEO's plan to get rid of organizational hierarchy in terms of how his employees work. This is a giant pharmaceutical company and, you know, billions and billions of dollars in Germany. And he is completely flattening the org chart when it comes to certain aspects of how work gets done. And I have clips from the Wall Street Journal podcast episode about this with an interview with the CEO. And I want to share that with you.
And the CEO is fairly new, right? He's kind of came into a stagnant mess. Would that be a good way to present that?
Yeah, basically Bayer's kind of stagnated, and this guy, what's his name? Who's the new Bayer CEO?
It doesn't matter because they don't want to have bosses anymore. It doesn't matter.
No, I had his name here. Bill Anderson, that's it. Yeah, I was getting confused. Chip Cutter is the reporter who did the story. Bill Anderson's the new CEO. And so I've excerpted some of the quotes, like him describing this new strategy, which is called dynamic shared Dynamic Shared Ownership. Sorry, it's hard to remember because it's not very catchy, but this is his new plan. It's called Dynamic Shared Ownership. He coined this term. He even admits that it's not the flashiest term, but the idea is to empower employees to make big decisions without having to get the approval of layers and layers of management. So now I'm gonna play a clip here for you.
This is like, no, we're blowing that all up. You're talking about fundamentally rewiring everything in the company. It's more like a living organism. And in the old system, of course, you had to be able to present it all on a piece of paper because management's job was to control it. We'll end up with we'll still have an org chart for administrative purposes, you know, who signs whose paycheck or whatever. But the org chart won't actually represent how the work's getting done.
The org chart won't actually represent how the work's getting done. Let's talk about how the work's going to get done. Or actually, before I do that, let's talk about why this needs to change. Here's the CEO, Bill Anderson, talking about the problem with culture in corporate America.
Our people, if you look what they're doing outside of work, they're running a family, they're involved in their church, they're involved in their community, they're organizing, you name it. They're doing stuff. They're taking responsibility. They're owning decisions. This is not a foreign concept to them. You know, they've gotten educated in great colleges and right, and then they come to an office where they're basically given this little job and like, oh, yeah, you don't make decisions. And so that no wonder people are so disillusioned with corporate life.
That really resonates with me because that's how I felt when I went to a big firm. I was given the job of a manager after selling my firm. I went to the big firm. They gave me the manager job, and I really had no autonomy, no authority. I had to fit into that box, and I tried to change the system, but it wasn't possible. And even though my boss supported my efforts, he told me that because of the structure of the firm, it wasn't going to be possible to do any of those things. So this is part of the problem in public accounting, right? People come in and they have all this education and they're given this little job to do with no autonomy. Who wants to do that kind of work? And the CEO of Bayer, Bill Anderson, recognizes that. So what they're doing is they're going to allow employees to self-organize on projects. And the projects will last perhaps a quarter. And then the employees will be allowed to reorganize. So you, David, if you worked at Bayer, you would actually get to talk to all the other people and pick what projects you want to work on. And if I wanted to do something at Bayer, I'd have to recruit people to come work on my project. And they would get to choose. The employees are going to self-organize. And Bayer's going to get rid of like half of their middle management. And here's the description. They actually are doing training sessions on how this works. And here is Chip Cutter. He went into a training session at Bayer and observed this happening.
Just stand up, share an idea.
The facilitator said, hey, shout out a big idea. Shout out something you want to do. And if your colleagues agree, you should go stand next to that person. So someone said, like, I want to launch a product in the next 6 months that meets sort of some unmet consumer need somewhere.
Whoever is interested, stands up and join. Just vote with your feet.
So literally, people just stand up, say, I have an idea, and people who want to work on that project go over and stand with that person.
I love, love, love that this story is happening and this march is happening. I discovered the Clue Train Manifesto 25 years ago at the dawn of the internet, right? No, I discovered it when I was 10 years old. So it's even actually older than that, but it was written at the dawn of the internet. And the thesis is that markets are conversations, right? And it's all because of the internet and things linking to each other. And you can think about from a marketing standpoint or speaking to consumers or customers, but the same is true for internal organizations, right? And I'll just read the main introduction, half the sentence. Networked markets are beginning to self-organize faster than companies have traditionally been able to serve them. So it's kind of that same thing. Employees can organize properly faster than managers can delegate down.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the idea, Gator in the live stream says, how are they going to get people to do the projects nobody wants? And I think the idea is that if nobody wants to do the thing, it's probably not worth doing at a company like Bayer, where the people who work there are white collar professionals who are very highly educated and intelligent. And why, you know, why do we have a layer of middle managers telling people what to do when they might be able to organize themselves? So it's a really, I don't know if it's going to work. It's a fascinating experiment, and it's one of the world's largest companies is going to try it. And if it's successful, this could completely change how businesses are managed. This hierarchical structure that we have in public accounting, right, that's only existed for 100 years. It's not that long in the scope of human history. And same in corporate America, right? Like that, this was all developed in the last 100 years, pretty much. And maybe there's a better way for knowledge workers to get work done. You know, now that we can share information better, we don't need a bunch of managers sitting in the middle of the people and the work that needs to get done. And arguably, you see that. Go ahead.
I was going to bring up Boeing. Arguably, this is what's happening with Boeing.
Right.
Boeing moved, they took the managers who used to sit next to the engineers and the quality people and the people building the planes, and the manager could look out the window and go see the plane. They moved them all to South Carolina in some corporate offices and tried to manage the whole thing. It doesn't work. You can't manage the building of a plane if you're not next to the plane.
Yeah. Boring accountant says, who is going to measure results? Who is going to hold people accountable? This is like group projects in university where one person does all the work. Yeah. I guess the group itself will have to hold itself accountable and manage itself. We'll see if it's possible. I don't know. Personally, I've never enjoyed organizations that I've worked in where there's been like a hierarchy. I've always struggled with that because a lot of stuff ends up getting done, not because it's going to benefit the business, but because it's going to benefit the person who runs the project. That there's all this competition between managers to control employees and control work and all the politics of all of that. It's like little tiny fiefdoms. And if you can get rid of that waste, then the projects that really drive the business forward can get done instead of having a bunch of managers and executives who are like all competing for power.
Yeah. That's what I've told people working at Intuit. Intuit's really like $7 billion businesses, and actually more now. They've gotten MailChimp and these other acquisitions they've done. It's probably like $15 billion businesses. And so no matter what you do, you're always stepping on somebody else's business.
Right. So right.
It's always that you're just, you can't do anything because you're always, wait a minute, now you're going to take some revenue from us. And you get a lot of that mindset. If you have clients with uncategorized expenses and piles of receipts from the likes of Amazon, Walmart, Target, Costco, and Home Depot, or uncategorized deposits from Venmo, PayPal, Square, Stripe, and Cash App, then Uncat is for you. Thousands of accountants and bookkeepers have switched from sending spreadsheets of uncategorized transactions to their clients every month to using Uncat. Using Uncat is easy. Uncat syncs with QuickBooks and gets clients' responses back fast so you can close the books on time every time. No more chasing down clients for receipts or sifting through countless uncategorized expenses. Uncat will not only help you get information for the uncategorized expenses you have receipts for, but their newest feature, Uncat Receipts, allows you and your clients to upload, categorize, and sync emailed, photographed, or PDF receipts directly into QuickBooks. Uncat will also detect and match the receipt to an existing transaction in QuickBooks if it exists and attach the receipt properly. Your clients don't even need to create a login. They get a magic link from Uncat to quickly answer your questions and then get back to growing their business. You'll love the price of just $5 a month per client, which includes the new receipt capture feature. If you're ready to say goodbye to piles of receipts and endless data entry, head over to accountingpodcast.promo/uncat. That is accountingpodcast.promo/UNCAT. I do have an example of this in practice, this theory in practice in our own industry, Blake.
What's that?
None other than H&R Block.
So H&R Block?
H&R Block.
The tax prep firm?
Yeah, the tax prep company we're all familiar with. They have 39,000 employees. And then when COVID started, you know, everybody had to work from home. But then they, 2021, when COVID dipped there for a little bit, they started doing hybrid work, right? Just as it dialed back. But then they also started requiring 2,000 corporate employees to come back into the office Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. But then COVID surged again. They had to send everybody back home. And then they were growing and they had to hire corporate employees and they wound up hiring people that were fully remote. And they, what they, and this is good because it's going to tie to my next story. High performing staff clearly preferred remote work.
Mm-hmm.
So your best employees prefer remote work.
I do.
And, yeah.
Am I a good employee, David?
You're a good employee, Blake. We'll let you go this time. And to the executive team, I had to rethink this whole thing. And here is their conclusion from Jeff Jones, the H&R Block CEO. This is what he told Fortune Magazine. There isn't a good reason why we would do that. Like, there's just no reason to have a required to come back to office policy. They could not come up with a reason. And later in the article, he talks about how he wants to run his company, his personal management style. Quote, I want to hire great people, empower them the best I can, and hold them accountable to outcomes. I don't want to micromanage how many hours a day they're on Teams or how many days a week they're in the office, as long as we're delivering on our commitments.
Okay. I like that philosophy.
So he's starting to go down the same march as the CEO of Bayer, right?
And now, go ahead.
And to tie that one sentence, high-performing staff clearly preferred remote work, it ties to another article, but I won't jump to it if you have thoughts on this.
I just wanted to address one of the issues that always comes up when remote work is discussed, which is productivity. Does productivity go up or down? We've seen a bunch of different studies on this. And the answer, in my view, after looking at all these studies and trying to compare them, is that it's a net zero, in that you lose some productivity due to not being in the office. And there are inefficiencies with remote work, but you gain productivity because people are happier. They're working more hours because they're not stuck in the car. People tend to replace their commute with work, is what we find. And the San Francisco Fed found that in their study, basically that it's a wash overall. There's little statistical relationship between telework and pandemic productivity performance. They did a study of what happened during the pandemic. And so we don't need to have this argument based on productivity, that if your boss is saying we need to come back to the office because we're more productive in the office, that's false on average. So unless there's something special about the way your company works in person, it's not true. And the thing that doesn't get counted is the high cost of having your employees come to the office, making them live close to a major metro where your office is, has real costs to them in terms of housing and school and all the other things that come with that. And if they can move out further and live in a lower cost area, their money will go a lot further. And that's a big benefit in accounting.
And take the finances out, just the energy drain of having to drive in the commute. You already get to work and you're like exhausted.
Yeah.
Because you just had to deal with traffic for the last hour and a half or something.
I did it, you know? I did it for a year in LA, and I couldn't do it for more than a year. I was on the 405 every day, an hour, hour and a half. Not good for my mental health, not good for my physical health. I gained a ton of weight. Yeah, having those 2 hours back every day is life-changing for me.
Yeah. Well, you exercise 2 hours a day now. That's what you're
doing. I try.
Into, is that.
Didn't do it yesterday, but an hour, hour and a half, sometimes two.
So you're saying there's a net effect on productivity.
There's no net effect on productivity.
Send
all your employees home. It's a wash. On average.
On average. Yeah. Got it. Well, what is not a wash is the salary that remote workers get on their paychecks when they stay home.
And I'm glad you got to that, because that is the title of our episode today.
Remote
accountants get paid less.
We took a very long road to get here, but we're going to get here. So ZipRecruiter did a study for the average wages of hybrid remote workers and in-office workers in the United States. Here's the results. Fully in-office workers average $82,000 on average. Hybrid workers average $60,000 on average, right? Mm-hmm. So basically almost $22,000 less than in-office, so hybrid. Fully remote get about $75,000 on average. So in the office, you're making more. Fully remote, you're making more. But if you're kind of hybrid, not making as much.
Weird.
It is weird. But then when you think about what the CEO at H&R Block said, the higher performing staff prefer remote work. So you basically are giving them a higher salary because they're high performing. You're giving them a higher salary and letting them work remote. So if you're in the top tier of corporate performance, let's call it that, you're going to be able to demand a higher salary and remote work. It's those people in the middle that aren't really in the office, they're kind of hybrid, but they're not great performers, they're taking the big hit salary-wise.
Yeah. And they are at a bigger risk of getting laid off. I spotted a story in the Wall Street Journal back in January that said that a Gartner survey found that 68% of executives and managers perceived in-office workers as higher performers than remote employees. Even though this may not be true, if you're in the office, you will be perceived as a better employee.
You're sitting in your cube playing Tetris, of course.
Yeah. And so as a result, you are more likely to get laid off if you are fully remote. But if you're a high performer and you're critical, then maybe that is not true. So I think you have to, you can't just look at the numbers in aggregate. You have to really think about, where do I stand in this organization? And if I'm known to be a high performer, I can go work remote and be safe. But if I'm a low performer, a mediocre employee, and let's be honest, right? Most people are average employees, right? Then maybe going remote isn't the best thing for your career. Did they quantify the difference is like what, $20,000?
If you're hybrid, yeah, $20,000 lower than in office. Yeah.
So, but, you know, and that can be seen as like a negative thing, like, oh, well, why would I want to go remote if I'm going to get paid less? But to me, this shows the true cost of having employees come to the office, right? So employers are finding that to get people to come back 100% in the office 5 days a week or more, they have to pay more. Yep. And that's because there's a true cost that employers have never had to pay before, because they could just require everyone to come to the office. And so employees had to pay this cost. We had to pay it through gas and through the car that we buy and depreciate and through the additional cost of living close enough to the office to do that, right? Or the cost of our time. And now employers are actually having to bear this cost. I think commute time should really be part of the calculation when you take a job. You know, if you have to commute 2 hours a day, add that to the hours you're working, really. And employers should think that way too.
And way before these days of remote work and all this type of stuff, but going back to like high performers, I remember an engineer architect guy at Intuit, and this is years, I'm going back 15 years. The reason he took a job with Intuit is because they let him have Fridays off so he'd go sailing his boat. So he was that good Monday through Thursday that he was able to just negotiate not working at all ever for, you know, and that's why he took the job. He could have gone to any company, but Intuit was the one that let him go sail his boat on Fridays.
Well, and that's becoming more and more common, right? Maybe that was really uncommon when that happened. How long ago was that?
I'm dating myself. At least 15 years, easily. Yeah. No longer than that, because my daughter wasn't born. She's 18 now, so 20 years ago.
Well, more and more companies are adopting four-day work weeks. There was a story in CPA Practice Advisor about this last month. And you know, there's some examples of companies like Insomnia Cookies and Philly Marketing Labs that have adopted a four-day work week. They've reported positive feedback from employees and no negative impact on productivity or client satisfaction. In the UK, a pilot involving 61 organizations implementing a four-day work week found that 89% continued with the model after a year, with many making it permanent. The study reported positive impacts on staff well-being, lower turnover, and easier recruitment. So compare this to accounting and tax in particular, where we are having this debate still about whether or not to make employees come in on Saturdays during busy season. You have other companies that are moving to a four-day work week and reporting no decline in productivity. So why do we require staff to come in on the weekend during busy season? It's an antiquated idea. If they can get the work done in five, great. If they can get the work done in four, even better, right? Why have butts in the seats? Doesn't make sense.
We're just stuck in those old ways.
Ever wished you could earn CPE credits while on the go? Introducing Earmark, the app revolutionizing the way accountants earn their CPE. Just listen to your favorite accounting and tax podcasts, whether you're driving to work, working out, or even doing chores. After you're done listening, take a quick quiz. Score 70% or higher, you've earned your CPE. It's that easy. Plus, with Earmark, you're not just ticking a box. You're actually learning valuable insights from top accounting podcasts. So why wait? Download the Earmark app now on iOS or Android and transform your listening time into CPE credits. Make the most of your day and stay ahead with Earmark. David says, I started my job search the minute my employer told everyone we were going to have to come back to an office. And that's what happens. We get higher turnover at organizations that require everyone to come back to the office. For sure.
Man, we plowed through a lot of stories already. This is good.
That's great. Let's get to some listener mail here.
All right.
This is from Dave Olson of Nimble. He said, hey, Blake, we just hired a guy with this on his resume. Love it. And here's what was on the resume. FAQ. Are you a CPA? I am not. Upon graduating college, I was faced with a decision. Pursue my master's degree and the CPA accreditation or build my company. I determined the real world experience would be far more beneficial than another book learning achievement.
Amazing.
So he put on his resume why he didn't go get the CPA, because he wanted real world experience. And that obviously appealed to Dave, who's running a fast growing firm. So, you know, take a non-conventional approach to your resume. Maybe it'll pay off.
That is not the poster child the ASCPA wants out there.
No, it's not. But it, you know, it shows you that the this is the cost of the additional 150 hours is people who want to get into the real world are going to not get their CPA. So here's another one. This is from Cody. This is about Big Four versus industry. Cody says, hi, guys. On an episode a few weeks ago, you talked about comparing people's career paths that chose to start in Big Four versus those who went straight into industry. I think this is a bad comparison because it's looking at the top accounting firms versus every single company, no matter how small. A better study would be to compare Big Four to those who went to and started in companies like Microsoft, Ford, or Wells Fargo, or government agencies like the Fed, FBI, or IRS. Essentially, compare the top to the top, not the top to everything. I chose to skip Big Four, but was lucky enough to intern at the Securities and Exchange Commission in college. This still allowed me to get into any door I wanted and have had an extremely successful career so far, including providing testimony in criminal cases for the Department of Justice and running a forensic accounting team all before I turned 30. I'm now at a federal agency in a position that many Big Four accountants aspire to. I really appreciate what you are all doing, especially exposing the hypocrisy of the 150-hour rule and the mess that is NASBA/AICPA. Keep it up. Thanks, Cody.
Now, what job does he have in the government that everybody's aspiring to? The wheels are turning here now.
You know, high-level finance, you know, accounting, like those are good jobs in the government. And traditionally, people thought, oh, I got to go to Big Four, get that on my resume before I can get a job like that. But Cody disproves that. And I think that's going to become more and more common. And I certainly hope it does.
You never have to work overtime in government jobs either. They got that stuff.
Well, if you do, you get paid handsomely for it, handsomely. Right? Yeah. This is from Hannah. Hannah says, hello, can't thank you enough for the advocacy and thoughts on the profession. Love the show. Just curious, we see a lot of firms shifting work to India and the Philippines. Any idea of how much these average hourly-based salaries are for tax preparers and auditors in these countries? Are the firms just finding a cheaper way to burn out people, since a lot of younger USA folks who may be considering and or working in this profession seem to be done with the partnership scheme? Sad to see more inequities out there, but leave it to the folks that keep the flame lit, money over people. So we just talked with Nicholas, I forget his last name, from Office. I can't pronounce
South
it.
Offices.
South Offices.
South Offices.
And he does offshoring in Argentina. That's going to be a bonus episode that comes out soon. Sorry, not offshoring, nearshoring. He's got a nearshoring firm. But similar idea, right? Hiring accountants outside the U.S. for your firm. And he gave us some idea of like the cost. And I think he said like it's a third the cost of the U.S. to hire somebody with an offshoring team in India. You know, maybe it's like half in the Philippines. It's a little bit more in Argentina.
About 70%, 30% less.
60, so something like that. So yes, it is, they make less than we do, but the cost of living obviously is different. And so, you know, like that's why they take the lower pay. Now, as to the second question as to whether firms are just burning out people, I would not be surprised if it's the same thing in India, where you've got these Big Four firms just churning through young people who are willing to put up with the toxic conditions because they don't have the power that we do in the United States as accountants due to the labor shortage, right? There's still a lot of people in India. It's growing still, right? So I think those kind of firms might just be shifting. But I find that the small firms that I talk to that are doing nearshoring and offshoring, they take a completely different approach where, because of the cost savings, they drop their utilization targets for these staff so that they're half as much billable as, say, somebody in the U.S. would have to be. And they can spend a lot of time on learning and development and improving processes and automating. So instead of, you know, having a requirement that you have 2,000 hours of billable time every year or whatever it might be, you only have to have 1,000 because my cost is half in the Philippines. So the firm benefits because now these staff are able to actually work on improving processes and systems and not just grinding away. And the staff are better off because, you know, they're not stressed out.
Yeah,
so it just depends on how you do it, right? That's the moral of the story here.
So speaking of outsourced labor, I don't know if you saw, you know, that Amazon, what are they called, Fresh Stores or Just Walk Out, when you could just, in New York City, you could go into the Amazon store and grab a Coca-Cola and a sandwich and a Snickers bar and just put them in your pockets and just walk out. And then later on, you would get a receipt texted to you. And they said it was all AI doing all this. Apparently, It was 1,000 employees in India watching all the video footage and then figuring out what you took, Blake, and then putting into a little, you know, an invoice or a receipt, charging your credit card, then emailing you a receipt.
It's great. Fake AI.
Fake AI.
Well, now Amazon is they responded and they said to this was like an internal source, right?
Yes.
It wasn't disclosed. So somebody inside the company told, what's the publication?
This was in Business Insider.
Okay. So Business Insider, they're legit, right? But like a little bit sensationalist, right? Yeah. So I trust that somebody actually said this. The question is like how much of it was human? Because we know that these AIs aren't perfect, right?
They said 50 out of every 1,000 sales.
That's what Amazon said.
That's what Amazon said. But so maybe it's somewhere in the middle. Maybe it's 500 out of 1,000. The informant claimed 700 out of 1,000. So there's a big disconnect. Who do you believe here? Right?
Yeah.
I lean towards it's probably not the tape. It's probably 700. It's probably half. 500.
It's probably somewhere in the middle, right? Somewhere in between 5% and 70%. But yeah, that's funny.
Which explains, because a lot of people say you leave that store and it could be hours before you get your receipt and get charged on your credit card.
And that's why. Because for the ones that the AI isn't certain about, they have a human review the tape and then make the receipt for you.
Yeah.
But you know what? It works, right? Because the cost of labor in India is like, what, $10 an hour or less or something like that?
Well, apparently it doesn't work, because didn't they just shut down all those stores?
Oh, did they? That's too bad. I never got to use one.
Yeah. So they've shut it down, but it was working. So probably it wasn't working. It's time to simplify your clients' accounts payable and cash flow management with Settle. Settle's all-in-one platform is designed to save time, reduce errors, and provide unparalleled support for you and your clients. With Settle, you can manage all your clients' payment workflows in one place, from purchase orders and goods received notes to bills and payments. Settle's automated features, OCR, and three-way PO matching eliminate manual tasks, allowing you to focus on providing your clients strategic advice and growth opportunities. Settle's integrations with QuickBooks Online and NetSuite keep your clients' financial data in sync, while comprehensive reporting helps you monitor their cash flow and make informed decisions. Plus, with Settle Working Capital, you can offer your clients built-in, transparent, flexible financing solutions to support their growth. As a Settle accounting partner, you'll have access to exclusive pricing and a dedicated support team ready to assist you with client onboarding, migration from other AP tools, and a portal to easily manage your clients. You'll also have a direct line to provide product feedback, ensuring Settle continually evolves to meet your needs. To learn more about how to save thousands in annual fees by switching from bill, head over to accountingpodcast.promo/settle. That is accountingpodcast.promo/settle.
Well, it's funny that you brought up that story, because I just saw a piece in Accounting Today. BotKeeper Infinite replaces outsourcing with more AI to help firms automate.
Hey, we touched on that for a second last week. That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, this is so funny, because those of our listeners who have been listening to the show for years will remember that we exposed BotKeeper for using humans and pretending that they had AI. They were one of the first automating accounting with AI companies, going to accounting firms saying, we're going to use AI. And it turned out it was a bunch of people in the Philippines doing the work. And they were pretending that it was AI. It was fake it till you make it in the startup world.
And the big issue you had with it was it wasn't disclosed properly to the accounting firms who needed to disclose to their clients, right?
Right. They were, it was deceptive. Deceptive marketing, deceptive business practices, and they changed as a result. Because of our coverage, BotKeeper admitted that they were using people, and they eventually became very upfront about being an offshore outsourcing organization. I just think it's funny that now that we have generative AI, it's actually possible. Like what they originally were trying to do is now possible thanks to ChatGPT. And so they put out this press release. They've got this new product, BotKeeper Infinite, which they say is actually AI, and that it reduces bookkeeping costs by 30 to 50%. It is a technology called, they call it AutoPush, and it's a machine learning model that learns from financial transactions and improves over time. This allows the platform to automate routine accounting tasks, which I was very skeptical about years ago when we didn't have these large language models, but now I believe is totally possible.
And I think the key selling point of this model is they go out of the way to say, like, in place of outsourcing.
Right.
Right. Like they're disrupting themselves now. Right.
Yep. Going down my list, I just want to get to this before we forget. Have you been following the whole saga of the Ohtani translator?
The baseball guy, the guy who made the biggest contract.
Shohei Ohtani.
He's on the Dodgers.
Yeah, yes. Guy, yeah. Shohei Ohtani is one of those rare pitchers, hitters. He made the biggest deal in baseball history with the Dodgers. And then right after that, this story comes out that his translator has been secretly betting on games. And the implication was that Shohei Ohtani was using the translator to bet on games, which would be a humongous no-no, right? Like that's a baseball, huge violation of MLB rules.
Rose.
I mean, yeah, he could get kicked out of baseball, right? Yep. And fortunately for fans of Shohei Ohtani, it's looking like the translator, the interpreter, Ippei Mizuhara was acting on his own. He allegedly stole $16 million from Ohtani to fund illegal sports bets. He admitted to hijacking Ohtani's account and impersonating him to bank staff to support his gambling habits. So he'd call up the bank and pretend to be Ohtani. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you're on the phone. How is the bank going to know any difference, right? Like, they hear one Japanese guy and they think it's Ohtani, right? And he has all his information. So he placed apparently 19,000 bets between December 2021 and January 2024. So that's 19,000 bets in like 3 years. An average bet was $12,800. Now, betting on sports is not illegal in California, where Ohtani has played since 2018, but it is against MLB rules. And Mizuhara could face up to 30 years in prison if convicted.
What's interesting about that story is, so when he signed that contract, he took a lot of advice from like financial planners, and it's some weird, isn't it almost $1 billion contract or something? And it's, but he deferred the payments in a strange way.
Yeah, it's deferred compensation. Yeah.
So obviously he had like accounting advice, accountants involved, financial planners involved. Like, was anybody actually looking at his bank statements and like noticing this activity? I feel like there's a strange disconnect that happened here of who's advising him and what they had access to.
That's a good point. Like, where was his financial managers, right? Where was his business guy? I would assume the guy like Ohtani would have a business manager who oversees his financial life. And wouldn't that guy see like a bunch of like sports gambling going on? I mean, I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to, we can only speculate.
Yeah, that didn't add up. You want to talk about something else that didn't add up?
Yeah, sure.
We don't even talk about this.
Let's do it.
Obviously, AI is everywhere. Accounting Today had a headline out and I texted it to you when I saw it come through.
Yes.
59% of accountants use AI to save about 30 hours a week. And as soon as I saw the headline, I'm like, what? This is crazy. And then I saw this other headlines like, only 48% of accounting, consulting, legal, and private capital professionals have used AI tools at work despite their nearly universal demand for technology. And I just see all these crazy stats where my stories, but it's all tied to one study.
Yeah.
All these headlines.
This headline, I saw this and I thought, this makes no sense, right? We have a massive problem of overwork in the profession, and Accounting Today is saying that more than half of accountants are saving 30 hours a week. Was this headline written by AI? Because it's completely inaccurate. So I went and I downloaded the report, and I don't know who messed this up. Was it Accounting Today just repeating and regurgitating a press release? But that's not what the report says. What the report says, it's like from some software company, is that AI has the potential to automate 31 hours
they
of
believe,
work.
They believe was the right. word.
Exactly.
Questions.
So, you know, talk about human discretion and judgment being necessary in journalism. Like, that didn't happen here. And they totally got the headline wrong. And now AI is going to read that headline and it's going to regurgitate falsehoods. It's
like, when you search on Copilot later on, what percent of accountants use AI, you're going to get this headline.
So I don't know if how this happened, but if Accounting Today is using AI to write stories from press releases, then they probably should look at their controls to make sure that they're factually accurate, because this is just total crap. I mean, I'm really bullish about AI. We're using it at Earmark to automate a bunch of stuff, but like nowhere near 30 hours a week per person.
And these surveys are, and because we took the survey 2-3 weeks ago, we covered a survey. Now it might even been Accounting Today's survey. And these surveys are a little loosey-goosey when it comes to the word AI.
Yeah.
Like, because they want to know, like, are you using AI at home? And basically, if you ask Alexa to start a timer, they're counting, that is AI use. So these numbers are way inflated, when maybe they should be very specifically like, do you have a login for ChatGPT? Yes or no? And maybe judge it by that. And when you logged in, have you used it to actually
do
impact
a work
your
task.
Work
yeah.
right, or a task? These surveys are just, they're ridiculous. And I found this survey when I was looking at the data, very similar to the survey Accounting Today did, which tells me some third, you've worked in marketing, these third-party companies, you pay them, hey, we'll do a survey for you. They're selling the same dumb AI survey to a bunch of app companies. We're going to see this 20 more times. Mm-hmm. Dumb surveys, the same thing over and over again. And then everybody picks it up. Investing.com picked it up. Yahoo picked it up. Accounting Today picked it up. I'm sure Past Advisor will pick it up. I'm sure Accounting Web will pick it up. It's just like, I don't know. These surveys are just bad. We should do a survey, a real survey.
We should do real surveys with the Earmark app. I want to do that someday. I've got two clips to take us out, David.
Perfect.
I'm a big fan of the All In podcast, the number one tech podcast, and they talk a lot about automation affecting professional services. And I was listening to episode 170, and this clip caught my attention. Take a listen to this. This is David Friedberg talking about what he thinks AI is going to get used for.
I think like the success will probably accrue to one company that replaces one set of core human services, like being a lawyer, being an accountant, you know, being an artist in whatever way, and that ends up being the specific vertical tool that people will use to automate and scale up their ability to do that task in an automated way. Because I think that there's like a great deal of capability that emerges in the fine tuning and the unique data that certain people may have to make that one tool better than the rest. And therefore, everyone will end up using this one lawyer service or this one accounting service or what have you. So I definitely think that's kind of what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious where this is going. You got co-pilots assisting a developer or a lawyer, then the next, or a writer. Then they got the next phase. Okay, you've got a peer. So you're doing peer programming, or somebody's kind of working alongside you. You're checking their work.
And then the next phase is that it actually does the work. So think about this. The accounting firm of the future might be a lot of AI. I think there will still be accountants working in the firm, but I think a lot of the audit work, a lot of the internal audit kind of work will get automated, because a lot of it is just checking boxes, right? And if you're just following a set of instructions and there's not a lot of discretion going on, if you're just completing work papers, that is something that an AI can probably be trained on if it just observes enough people doing it over time. It's the same way they're training humanoid robots. All the robots, David, are going to look like people. All these companies that are building robots have totally abandoned anything other than humanoid robots, even though other designs might be more efficient. The reason is that if you want to train a robot to do a task, the best way to do it with generative AI is to feed it video of humans doing the task.
Yeah.
So you give the robot the same articulated limbs as humans, and you have it watch a bunch of videos of humans, and it learns just like a human child would. And so think about that in terms of audit. If you just screen shared an auditor doing their job, a staff auditor putting together work papers, could an AI watching enough of that learn how to do the job too? Possibly.
And hopefully if the AI is doing that monotonous work, you can step back and be like, wait a second, these bank statements don't make any sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Like we could actually do our job, which is to exercise professional discretion rather than just putting together work papers to justify a predetermined audit opinion.
And then with AI, now you don't even have to do a sampling anymore, right? You do the full audit.
Here's one more clip that I found fascinating here. This was on Instagram, and it's from Y Combinator.
No audio yet.
Oh, you're not getting the audio?
No audio.
My bad. Hold on.
While you're sharing that and getting that configured, Blake, I just want to let everybody know, I watched the first episode of Mr. Bates versus the Post Office on Amazon. On Amazon Prime, everybody can watch it for free. So you can go there tonight, this weekend, watch Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. If you want, you can purchase all four episodes for $9.99, which is what I did because I don't want to have to remember to cancel a PBS Masterpiece subscription at $5.99 a month. So I just paid $10 and I'll own the full series. It's really well done. And for me, I actually get upset watching it in the same way I did when I kind of discovered this, because these are just teeny small business owners, right?
Yeah.
Many of, just like all the clients, many of our listeners work with every day. And now they can't cover all 3,000 victims. So, you know, their registered directors are presenting victims in a way that you really truly care about them. But it's very clear why this is one of the biggest BBC hits ever on television and why after people watched it, there was so much Vimmer. Is Vimmer the right word when you're all fired up and you want to?
Anger,
vehemence. Right? And it's caused politicians to rectify the past. Mm. And it's this is a very, very well done TV show.
All right. I think I got the clip working now. This is Y Combinator talking about what kind of startups they want to fund next.
The type of startup we'd like to fund is new ERPs. ERP is an acronym that means enterprise resource planning. Think of this as an operating system that a business runs on. If you ever worked at a big company or a company of any sort, and if you had to log into a website to do your job, you were probably using an ERP. The problem with ERPs is usually they're clunky, hard to use, and their users hate them. They're also very expensive, and so we'd love to fund a new class of startups building a new kind of ERP. It would probably be different ERPs work in different industries to solve their problems better. Maybe it has modern UIs, better use of mobile applications, as well as AI. We just think there's so much opportunity there to build this mission-critical software that's really expensive. We want to fund it.
So that's Y Combinator, the seed startup incubator that Sam Altman used to run before starting OpenAI. They want to fund ERPs. So if you're an accountant and you think you can build a better NetSuite or a better Intacct or a better Oracle or SAP, it's been 20 years since one of those, you know, I mean, those apps are how long old? Decades old, right? So Y Combinator thinks that industry-specific ERPs is the future. Check it out. David, we got to go. That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you, everyone who joined us live. It's so cool to have like 130 people on the stream with us. You know, we just started streaming live to YouTube like last year. So we don't even give you like a regular time. You just show up. So exactly. This is awesome. For those listening on the podcast feed, you can join us live if you catch us when we happen to be streaming. Subscribe to us on YouTube and you'll get notified when we get live. Make sure you turn on that notification button. You can see what we look like. You can interact with us. Tell us what you think. Heckle us. You know, we like it all. And don't forget, you can earn free CPE with the Earmark app. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to earmark.app in your web browser or download the mobile app on iOS or Android. Sign up for free and earn free CPE for listening to podcasts such as this one and many others. And speaking of Earmark, we have to go jump to a meeting with our developers, David. So let's get to it. Bye, everyone.
Time for the classifieds. Stop settling for slow payments and say hello to the future of AR with Forwardly. Accounts that use Forwardly can receive payments in less than 22 seconds. Yes, under 22 seconds via the newly launched FedNow network. And if your bank or a client's bank doesn't yet use FedNow, Forwardly will send the payment via same-day ACH for free. To get paid in under 22 seconds, go to Forwardly.com. That's Forwardly.com. Want to make learning QuickBooks Online a breeze for your staff or clients while pocketing some extra cash? Royalwise.com's Owls platform is the perfect solution with over 100 hours of in-depth QuickBooks training content spanning more than 40 topics. Join the partner program and become a vital link in the education chain. Share custom affiliate links with your bookkeeping team and small business clients and see the rewards roll in with every successful referral. You're not just earning cash, you're connecting your network to valuable CPA credits and lessons led by one of Ignition's top 50 women in accounting, Alicia Katz Bullock. Enhance your service offerings and earn with each referral. Join today, royalwise.com/partner. That's royalwise.com/partner. Want to get the word out about your newsletter, webinar, party, Facebook group, podcast, ebook, job posting, or that fancy Excel macro you just created? Why not let the listeners of the Cloud Accounting Podcast know by running a classified ad? Hit the show notes for the link to get more info.